This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Pass, top of the far circle. Quinn gets it back again. Shot's not there. Joki Haru scores from here in the tournament. Scores! He did it again! Henry Joki Haru!
It's a game winner for Henry, and the Sabres continue to roll on home ice. Now they have a brief getaway to Raleigh. They'll leave this afternoon, take on the Canes tomorrow. But Marty and company, welcome in. It is on the heels of another, well, certainly a big offensive period, and that was the final period for Buffalo that allowed them to skate away with another win and boost the home numbers. My goodness, I mean, in this winning 6 of 7 overall, and all 6 of those wins coming on home ice, they outscored their opponents 29-14 in the 6 wins. It's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive, and yes, look, the first period was really good. I felt like it was a bit on the perimeter, and you know, the second period got away from them a little bit, especially, you know, penalty, give up a power play goal again, and you're down 2-0. Not the same attack mentality. There was some good moments, but not the same push, especially in the zone. But in the third period, they attacked, so that was good. Oh, before we go, I've got a note here.
Are we almost done?
And we're almost done. Yeah, before we leave, that's a 2-minute show. You know, you mentioned, you said good afternoon, Marty and company. Company yesterday stopped by the set, and this gentleman stopped by the set and says, Marty, I got the same problem you do right now with the landmines in the backyard. So I was listening to the show, and I was laughing. I'm not the only one. So that was...
How's his Wi-Fi?
I know. Well, probably good. Yesterday, we didn't make it through the first segment. We're hoping to have a clean game today, this afternoon, Duffer.
Oh, man. The unexpected start to any show, and long may it last. We try. You may not think this, but we do try to not talk about the same thing every day. And Lindy Ruff was able to give us something a little bit different, partly out of necessity. Score effect, banged up Yuri Kulik. So the lines changed. And also the pairings changed in the third period, as part of what you said was an attacking third period. Let's dive in a little bit. I mean, here we are seeing up front Thompson in the third period between Greenway and Tuck. What do the numbers tell us? What did the eye test tell us last night? Is there any likelihood that we see more of this moving forward?
Well, the numbers from last night alone, I thought were really good. And look, this is what you have to do as a coach. You feel like your team deserves a better fate after 40 minutes, but you're still down 2-0. And right now it's playoff mode, and you got to move things around. And unfortunately for Yuri Kulik, who got hit in the face playing with a bubble, and you know, he's a young kid. He'll adjust. Like, there was a couple of shots of him on the bench where he looked like, oh, he was struggling physically. So you're like, okay, you know,
we don't have to. But you remember that, right? Like, yeah, okay. You had mask issues where you literally told Tepo you couldn't see anything, right?
Yeah, oh, and yeah. I think, but and playing with guys that get hit, especially in the face, what happens is it's painful. The breathing becomes hard, and then you have to put a full bubble on. And a lot of guys have not played with a full bubble for over a decade. And then it's like, I can't breathe, and I get out there for 10 seconds.
It's vision seconds just as much, though, which sounds crazy, right, for some, because it's not like it's funny because so many of us grew up playing with a cage, but it doesn't really matter whether it's a cage or a bubble. It's your eyesight that has changed. And if you can't connect the dots to hand eye at the pace, oh my gosh, it's,
and even Dan Danivi pointed out a couple of times, like, it looks like Yuri was having a tough time handling the puck. So there was not just the, oh, I can't breathe and my mouth is hurting and all of that. Then you don't feel like you have the same execution level that you need to have to be able to be productive. So, you know, the third period start, and, you know, we see Greenway, Thompson, and Tuck. Thompson back to the middle. Funny enough, we talked about it on the show yesterday, is, well, what if you put Thompson back to the middle at some point and then look for, you know, a big-name winger? I mentioned Mikko Rantanen yesterday, and I'm like, what if Mikko Rantanen was to play with Tage Thompson? You know, and, you know, we're going to see Rantanen with Carolina tomorrow. So, anyway.
Unless he gets traded before then.
Unless they make, well, maybe we're going to see him on the Sabres side tomorrow. You never know.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want to start that rumor. I mean, but I...
It was okay, 2 days in a row you've said it. So what is it? Are you trying to start it or not?
I'm saying if he is going to be on the move, maybe that would be something the Sabres could do. But so not knowing that Tage Thompson was going to be asked to play center yesterday in the third period, I thought Tage was flying throughout the game. And he's been flying for many games. But can you take that same pace that you've had on the wing and apply it to the middle? And I think Alex Tuck is a guy that can skate really well and can push the pace. And obviously, Thompson and Tuck have had a lot of success together as a line 2 years ago and some of last year. And now you add Jordan Greenway. And it became a very big, very physical line that when they were on the ice yesterday, it was only for about 5 minutes of five-on-five time. Well, everything was...
Which, just so people know, I mean, that's a pretty standard number for one period, because when you factor in, if you factored in and there weren't power play time, you know, you'd be talking about 6-7 minutes for these top two guys in Thompson and Tuck, which is absolutely on average what you would play on a nightly basis.
Yeah, you figure, like, this obviously natural stat trick calculate the time on ice when they're all three on the ice. If you have a line change in the middle of play, Thompson jumps on the ice. He's on the ice for 78 seconds, then Greenway, then Tuck. Maybe they only play 33, 34, 35 seconds together, because so you're looking at this and you say, okay, that's about, you know, under just about 5 minutes, it's probably 8 or 9 shifts, or maybe 7 or 8 shifts together. Well, 7 or 8 shifts in a period is a good number when you roll three lines in a third period like Lindy Ruff was doing for most of the part. But look, their numbers were all about 2-1. 2-1 in shot attempts, 2-1 in shots, 2-1 in expected goals. Like, that's what you're getting from that line yesterday. That's exactly what you would want to get from that line. If you're going to say, we're going to trust you to play a lot in the third period, go and show us what you've got. And I think that the results were there. The results were there. Yes, you know, you see a J.J. Peterka goal. And Peterka with Quinn and Cousins was even better when you look at the numbers. In about 5 minutes of ice time, their shot attempts were 14-2. Like, that was better than the Thompson line. But I'm just saying, you had an opportunity to say, we're going well. We just need to tweak things to try to get a goal. You get the Peterka goal, you get the Tuck goal, and obviously the Joki Aho goal. That was all Lindy Ruff needed as a validation of his tweaking of the lines in the third period was working.
And what we saw in totality for the game was basically 8 different line combinations at 5-on-5. And when you just talked about the two lines, which were the Thompson line and the Cousins line, that left Yuri playing some time with Zucker and McLeod, and what basically stayed intact last night was Benson with Krebs and Malenstein. But it wasn't just, and if you were watching, I mean, you would have recognized yet again, eventually,
yep.
Because you talked about this after two, and it hadn't happened specifically in that period, but the engagement by Buffalo's defense and the offensive mindedness. Well, what we saw last night was, of course, Dahlin and Byram stay together, but then there was the third period change that saw more of Joki Haru with power and thus Gilbert with Samuelson. And both of those pairs, like everybody else on the team last night, had really good analytics because they blew Anaheim out of the water from a shot attempt standpoint. Yeah. The Ducks do rank 30th in that regard, so it's not an enormous surprise. What was a surprise was that Anaheim did fritter away the lead because they've been pretty good at holding it after two periods of play. So I think this is really relevant based on our brief chat last night on the post game about Power and Joki Haru, what they produced, but also moving forward. Because, Marty, to no one's surprise, the pairing that has been on the ice together the most this year by a landslide is Dahlin and Byram.
Yes.
But the second highest, third highest, and fourth highest pairs and time on ice all feature Owen Power.
Yeah.
He has spent over 200 minutes with Samuelson, with Joki Haru, and with Byram. And among pairings that have played north of 200 minutes together, Power and Joki Haru have allowed the fewest goals against. And yet last night, we're talking about them being plus three in that period, driving, helping to drive the offense and being on the ice for three goals.
Well, what it does too is we all know that the lefty-righty has been a discussion when it comes to the defense pairing. Dahlin and Byram, they don't seem to have any problems. And there was a couple of... I like the chemistry that they're building together now. And obviously, we've seen some of the best hockey Rasmus Dahlin has played all season long. The game against Nashville before the Four Nations face-off break. The game against the Rangers after that. But it's the chemistry and the partnership that those two have. Like, Byram was coming back towards the zone with the puck one time. Dahlin switched to the other side, like, given an option. That option wasn't there. He quickly pivoted, went back to the left. Like, they are so good now at reading off of one another. But I think when you don't play with somebody all that often, like, Owen Powers had, as you mentioned, many different partners, right? So you don't have the same foundation with anybody else because you're like, hey, you know what? I play 10 games with somebody, then I play 10 games with somebody else. It changes it a lot. And there's been injuries. But when you come in and Power is a lefty, Henry is a righty, and you put them together, it simplifies things because we don't have to worry about, do I go to the right now? Are you on the left? And like we don't have to crisscross over. It becomes simple. Look at Henry on his goal. He comes down the right side. Why? Because he was the right D on the right side. Right before that, Owen Power had a chance on the left side because he's the left D on the left side. Like, that's what you're getting, and it simplifies things. Now, I feel like it happened a little bit out of a kind of a weird moment. Like, Dennis Gilbert was on the ice for 4 seconds on a shift with Henry Joki Haru. And then he came to the bench to change. Power went on the ice. Boom, they scored the first goal. And after that, like, you look at, you know, you're probably Lindy Ruff, and you're like, hey, we had Power and Joki Haru on the ice? Yeah, let's give him another shift. Boom, they get on the ice. Like, they scored three goals in their first five shifts together. And you're like, well, we're not taking them apart. No, at the end of the game with the goalie pulled, we saw Samuelson and Power together, but in a different role. But I would expect tomorrow in Carolina, we're going to see what we saw at the end of the game. We're going to see Thompson with Green Wind Tuck. We're going to see, you know, Samuelson with Gilbert and Power with Joki Haru. I think you're going to start that way. Why? Because it worked, and it gave you exactly what you wanted to get in the third period.
Interesting. Would you expect any change on the blue line? Meaning like Samuelson and obviously like Gilbert's been in more regularly here. That's left Clifton and Bryson on the sidelines. And it's interesting because outside of those four pairings that I mentioned that have had the most time on ice together this year, with three of those pairings featuring Power, then the next pairing that has spent the most time together is Clifton and Bryson at close to 200 minutes. So again, they've carried eight all year. Obviously, the statistics show us that Power and Joakim Harju have played together a fair amount. I'm just really interested, and that's why I let in the way I did. Yes, last night in the third period was nice because they were on the ice for 3-4. But what's more impressive is the fact they've only been on the ice for 6 goals against. And when you continue to look at where Buffalo has been from a goals against standpoint, Marty, this has been, for all the fun and offense that we've been talking about, and I've been trying to hype more and more, you are consistently focused right now on defensive plays, typically, posture, whatever, in our in-game analysis and right here on Sabres Live. So I think Power and Joakim Harju deserve some credit for having a really low number. Well, the best low number out of any pairing that's played more than 200 minutes together this year.
A lot of
the
it
Sabres.
Is about puck possession, about being in the offensive zone, and I think they've done a great job in quickly transitioning, right? You go back, get the puck, transition quick, and then spend time in the offensive zone. That's how that pairing has been able to keep the numbers the way that they have been. You saw that yesterday. Even, you know, after the second period, we showed the time of possession in the offensive zone, and the Sabres had an edge, but I felt like they should have had a much bigger edge because of how often they had the puck. I just didn't think they were aggressive from the tops of the circles down in the offensive zone. Well, what happened in the third period yesterday? They were extremely aggressive from the tops of the circles down. Shot from the goal line, plays around the net, rebound, redirection, backdoor plays. Like, man, that probably could have been a 6-goal third period yesterday if it hadn't been for Lukas Dostal in net. But to go back to Power and Joakim Harju, for me, I think Henry Joakim Harju has a ton of confidence now, having had a chance to play and score and have some success individually at the Four Nations faceoff. Build off of that. Build off of the confidence. I know how a player feels when they're not playing. And this has been hard. Eight defensemen. You have 25% of your guys not playing on any given night, right? Yeah. That's hard.
It's a big number.
But that's a big number. But when you get in and you're feeling good like this, and it's fitting with somebody like Power, and it was fitting with Gilbert before that, like they were playing well together. There's, you know, there's no reason right now to make a change. And I get it. It's hard for Clifton and Bryson, but you continue making that push forward. And just quickly, I looked at the sheet this morning. I just wanted to bring it up in front
now,
of me.
Which sheet
right
would
now.
That be?
The game sheet. The game sheet that never, when I talk about the sheet, I talk about the game sheet. Excuse me, but the Sabres at 35
shots. You're a big
shots.
Curling enthusiast, too, so, you know, I worry
yeah,
about
the sheet of ice, the curling sheet, the whole, yes. The Sabres at 35 shots on goal. In a normal game this year where the Sabres have had 35 shots on goal, I would have said about 30% of those shots would have come from the blue line, would have come from the defense, because a lot of their play in the offensive zone was get it to the point, get it on net, get it to the point, create chaos, get it on net. Sabres had 4 shots from the defense yesterday. It was the forwards that led the way. Yeah, you had...
Well, Byram must have had all four then because...
Byram had 2. Joakim Harju had the 1 on the goal and Power had 1. That was your shots from the blue line yesterday in the game.
I'm going to ask for a review, just like the one Dahlin got the other day, to give him a 4th point of the game against the Rangers. It felt like, from my vantage point, that Byram had more. And maybe some of them didn't get through, but it was amazing to watch him generating from that position. So
Byram was said to have 5 shot attempts in the game.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Well, you should reinforce the number you threw at me in spontaneous trivia on the postgame last night, for anybody that missed it.
Which was?
High danger chances?
Oh, high danger chances in the third period at 5-on-5
yesterday. No, totality of the game. Remember the ratio? But
yeah, 9-1 in the third, 16-1, 5-on-5 for the Sabres yesterday.
Amazing.
But my point with the whole thing is that I felt like yesterday there was a click in the change of how we are going to create goals. Mm-hmm. It was in the third period, it became, let's work down low. Let's use our forwards to work down low. We haven't seen that often this season. When you look at the shots on goal by the forwards, Cousins at 4, Quinn at 3, Thompson at 7, Peterka 3, Tuck 5. Like, if you get those numbers mm-hmm. from your top 6, they average 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shots on goal at the end of the night. You're going to get the third period you did. You're going to get 3 goals in 20 minutes, and you're going to get those type of chances that you did against Anaheim.
So you said your hunch is that we're going to see the game tomorrow start in similar fashion to how it ended as far as pairings and lines. Today yes. was optional in their skate before they head to Raleigh. So, but the Canes, by the way, I mean, they're just a absolute mess right now. You could have fun stringing together a lot of Rod Brind'Amour post-game comments here over their last 6 games, which has produced 5 losses. And in those 5 losses, they have only scored 6 goals. They were shut out in Montreal last night. And so the irony in all of this is they acquired the best player in the deal back with Colorado last month. And and I know our friend Shayna Goldman at The Athletic and, you know, that outlet recently had kind of profiled, you know, whether Rantanen is a good fit. And obviously there's, and Shayna expressed this last week, like there's a lot of things that are going right. It's just, at the end of the day, a casual fan and quite frankly, anybody within their organization is going to go, we're not getting the results right now. Like, what's happening? And so very quickly, like, what would you expect here from Carolina tomorrow? We all know it's been really hard for Buffalo to win in that building for the majority of the last decade, but like, what are you thinking here as far as what we could see from Carolina, what the impact or lack thereof has been from Rantanen, what his future might be with the organization?
So Carolina had won 6 of 7 at the end of January, and they've only got 1 win in February. Now, I get it. They've only played 6 games, but it's the way they've lost games. 4-0 mm-hmm. to Montreal, 6-3 to Toronto, 3-0 to Winnipeg. Like, they've not looked good in games, and that... So there's 2 things we can see out of Carolina tomorrow. Either Rod Brind'Amour is going to have them come out flying, and you're going to see that, or it's going to be a little bit of the same as Carolina is searching for an identity right now. They are a team that every year we've been saying they probably could use a superstar, right? They probably could use somebody that will put them over.
They got Gensel last year.
They got Gensel. It didn't work. The year before that, it was
not
like...
Not his fault.
No, I know, exactly. The year before that, it was Pacioretty was injured. He ruptured his Achilles, and then they lost him. But that was the guy they were hoping was mm-hmm. going to put him over the top. And the same thing with Mikko Rantanen right now. I almost feel like Rod Brind'Amour, as good as a coach as he is, has a hard time being able to handle that. Rod Brind'Amour was not a superstar himself. He was a hardworking team guy that kind of like elevated his status to being one of the best in the league, but from the competitive nature that he had and a working nature that he had. And that's what his teams have always looked like. You know, you put them on the ice, they 1 through 4 lines, they work. How do you handle having a guy that has that much talent? And maybe sometimes as a shift or two that doesn't look right, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's the nature of being that good. So I feel like he's having a hard time handling that. He's having a hard time handling that elevated status of those type of guys. Now, he has superstar in Aho and Svechnikov, but they were there from the beginning. It's different when you're in an organization like Carolina from the beginning or when you come in from the outside and you've already got a base as to how you play.
For our younger audience that didn't have the opportunity to follow Rod Brind'Amour's career, I think you're right in obviously you're right. When are you ever wrong?
No, you're wrong.
Yeah, I don't think I've said, well, maybe I have said it. Anyway, the point is through the hard work, I mean, Brind'Amour did end up being one of the top point producers in NHL history. Like, he's just shy of 1,200 points for his career.
Yes.
In just shy of 1,500 games played. So there has long been, you know, the push, the belief that Brind'Amour was a Hall of Famer. We'll save that for another day. But the last night, yet again, and this was last year too, and probably many of the years, it's like, everyone that goes to Carolina ends up with great underlying numbers. Yes. Because their disparity in shots for and against is always plus, plus, plus. Mm-hmm. Last night, the shots were 20 to 18. So for in favor of the road team, Carolina. So yet again, despite Carolina's goaltenders end most seasons way ahead on the win-loss side, right? They give up so little that their goaltenders, like, it ends up looking like a terrible night for Freddie Anderson. He gave up four on 18 shots.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
the shots were 20 to 18 at the end of the game. Like, so, it was a very low event game.
So the oddity is that Carolina continues to rank highly in goals against average, last night notwithstanding, and low in save percentage. And I don't know how they massage that in the middle of the conversation that we're continuing to have from your vantage point, where they have to find a way to score even more. And Marty, their off-season acquisitions, to say they've paid off handsomely from a goal scoring and point production standpoint would be an understatement. Like, it was one of the talking points in the first half of the season for sure. Like, Roslovic coming in, Eric Robinson coming in, and the depth. But you're right, like, they still needed that in their eyes, that superstar presence. And in the short term here, it has not been figured out by their forwards.
Yeah, no, the top forwards definitely have to figure it out. And you're right, like, earlier in the year, it was like the Eric Robinson, we're like, where has Eric Robinson's skill level, like, risen up to? Like, Eric Robinson was an honest player with the Sabres, somebody that was on your fourth line, but was getting so many opportunities, and the results were there. And Roslovic, but again, it's the Carolina Hurricanes. It's how you can win games with using all four lines and all 12 forwards and the defense, right? That usually get involved in the offense as well. Now, quickly, because I know we're going to have to take a break, and maybe we think about this in the commercial break, is because you're going to need all 12 forwards and your four lines to be able to take part and play a hard game tomorrow in Carolina. What if you gave Jiří Kulík a night off and say, you know what, like, you got banged up, we'll give you a night off. We're going to play Benson with Zucker and McLeod, and we're going to insert Lafferty with Krebs and Malenstein. And then, you know, I don't think you want to go down to having to go down to three lines against Carolina in a game in Carolina where you don't have matchups, right? So that may be the one change I would make if I'm the Sabres tomorrow, depending on how Jiří feels after today and tomorrow morning's, like, you know, optional skates.
Interesting to chew on for sure. Again, Sabres had optional today, and both Carolina and Buffalo back in action tomorrow as they clash in Raleigh. We are just over a week away from the Sabres Road Crew event in Fort Lauderdale, and can't wait. It does fall on the exact same day as trade deadline. Sabres.com/Road Crew. Incredible list of alumni that will be there. Don Edwards, Danny Gare, among those who will be in attendance. This, if you're unfamiliar with our Sabres Road Crew past, typically we do one of these a year. Some years there's been more, but every NHL market across this league has still, even though some fans have moved away decades ago, there are passionate Buffalo fans all across this country. This is why we do this. We bring them together. It is a celebration of the game and obviously an opportunity for longtime Sabre fans and even recent ones to rub shoulders with some of the organization's great. So I can't stress enough how fun these events are on an annual basis. I look forward to seeing you all there. Tickets are just $20, sabres.com/road crew. We'll chew on Marty's thoughts and come back after this on Sabres Live.